Many of us strive to live happy and fulfilled lives. We'll help you get there on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Author and teacher Edward Fullyoun is with us today, and I'm curious, why isn't surrender the same as giving up?
Oh, giving up means no hope. Surrender is a yielding to what is. To what is available. But when we give up, there's no hope for our future. So there is quite a difference as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. So does that mean if I decide to just leave something alone, that might be a form of surrender? You know, not even bring up the fact that Nancy was late to get here today.
I think surrender means letting things be as they are. Mm-hmm. Giving up means you walk away. And sometimes when we walk away, the business is incomplete. We haven't finished.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because, you know, late is relative.
For the record, Nancy was not late today. I'm just picking on her because I can.
Because I'm here.
Right. That's what she's here for.
Indeed.
Okay. How can compassion be found in seeing people as they are? Seeing people as they are. Yes.
I think when we let people be as they are and we interrupt our reflex to judge them, then there's this possibility of their real beauty coming out in them. I think my mind, when it's reactive, it's so fast-moving and busy, I don't really give people the chance to be their authentic self. Mm-hmm. So I've been learning how to strip away the mischief in my mind so that I can see people truly as they are without the filter of how I want them to be.
And why is that beneficial for us?
Well, I think it allows us to take the pressure off of ourselves, because we may be doing the same thing to ourselves. I think there are a lot of societal messages of how we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to relate to each other, how we're supposed to succeed. And these aren't very compassionate approaches, mm-hmm. not to ourselves and not to other people. When we can drop that, more of the, can I call it the natural beauty of life can come forward.
Mm. You're touching on one of the things that we're going to talk about in the news already, and that's kind of the acceptance and demonstrating understanding. We'll get there.
Okay.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and if via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating, and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my co-host, Nancy Goldring, the consummate generalist.
Hi, Frank.
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
Great, great, great.
Yeah.
Today's guest is a new thought minister and a leading spiritual mind. And he's compassionate about showing and teaching each of us that we can be great and ordinary at the same time. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the author of The Power of Meditation, an ancient technique to access your inner power, the Bhagavad Gita for beginners, the Song of God in simplified prose, and the recently released Ordinary Goodness, the surprisingly effortless path to creating a life of meaning and beauty. So, if you, like me, want to know, how does caring about extraordinary things lead us to meaningful and extraordinary life experiences? Actually, that's how does caring about ordinary things lead us to meaningful and extraordinary life experiences? How do society's messages about perfection distract us from our ordinary goodness? And how is faith a muscle that must be exercised? Then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with none other than Edward Fulyun. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. You bet.
Wonderful to have you.
Before we get too deep in today's subject matter, I want to check in to see what's going on in the news.
Edward, what do you have, Frank?
Yes, yes. Edward, please don't be bashful. We want your thoughts.
Okay.
Also.
Well, I'm enjoying this so much already. It's wonderful.
All right. Here, I got something. All right. Five secrets to mindfulness strategies. All right. And this touches on something that Edward already mentioned. Try to understand your partner without judging.
For some people, someone's going to say, what does that mean?
Okay, well, that's what we're going to do.
We're going to expound
on it right now. So I take it to mean or to touch on the opportunity for your partner to reveal who they are without you running it through whether it's right, wrong, what you want it to be. But just the article actually says, allow your partner to just say literally what they want you to understand about them. Can you imagine just telling your partner, I'd like you to understand this about me and not judge it. I don't want your opinion on it. I just want you to understand this about me.
Mm.
That's it.
Mm.
I love it. I mean, it's...
He's the king of acceptance.
acceptance is my thing.
Is his
Edward.
Thing,
yes,
yes,
absolutely.
So
those words, mindfulness and allow and understand, just reminds me of how important it is to let people take their time to express themselves. I think sometimes judgment comes up because we're moving too fast without listening or even our speaking. I often joke about sometimes I don't listen. What I'm doing is I'm preparing my answer while the other person is speaking.
Yes. Mm. And also sometimes we're judging by wanting the person to reveal when we want them to reveal. Instead of allowing it to happen when that person is ready. That can be huge.
It can definitely be huge. I'm listening to you from a couple of different vantage points. Just that one alone, I'm thinking, I have certainly been in situations where by the time the person was interested in revealing,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't
done.
Even there. I was gone. I was just like, did you say something? It's almost as if I had run out of steam.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wanted to know. I was genuinely interested, and yet it's like, oh, I've been hanging out here so long. Obviously, this person doesn't want to share themselves. I want to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing else for me to do here. And by the time the person says, oh, you know, this and this and this and this, and can you imagine? I'm just like,
forget you. I don't know. What are you talking
about? I'm listening,
I'm
but
not
I'm not hearing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm just not the open place in my heart
mm-hmm.
for what there is to hear is closed.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing to actually, and I don't even think I really realized that until right now. It just falls flat on me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know what closes my heart is if somebody insists I reveal myself before, like you said, before I'm ready.
Yes.
Right.
And then I contract and I move into a closed space because I don't feel like it's, well, I guess safe enough to come out.
Yes, I can completely.
Yeah.
Understand.
No, I totally get that. I've never asked anybody, like, tell me what's going on? I need to know. At least not in the last 10 years, I don't think. And
I never.
I can't say ever. Yeah, not in the last 10 years. I pray I haven't in the last 10 years. And however, I have wanted it. I have wanted it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if just the energy of the energy and strength of that desire
was
felt. Enough to so you know but I can also see how if I'm really like wanting to understand, especially if say I'm not with my partner and I'm like really mulling over something and I'm wanting to understand it, this whole concept of that I was listening to last night about having an empty cup, like coming to life as an empty cup, and how oftentimes what we're hearing, how we're hearing, is filtered by what's already in the cup. So we're not hearing them, we're hearing our rendition of them.
Absolutely. So your own reflection.
Right.
Yep. Right. And, you know, what I find particularly interesting about this conversation and just that dynamic is we are together because there's something attractive about us to, you know, you're attracted to me, I'm attracted to you. There's something attractive there. But we kind of forget that when we become insistent upon the other person revealing. Instead of enjoying the attraction or whatever fun you had, you start harping on what is missing. And it becomes...
That's a buzzkill.
The attractiveness ceases to have the importance that it can if you really focus on that. It's powerful.
Yeah, we can get stuck on what's missing, and then that can really mess up everything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I've got. Let me give you the other four things, and I guess we're not going to extrapolate on these. Don't be too attached and possessive. And there was a quote with that: "You must love in a way that the person you love feels free." That's powerful. Be kind to each other. Set time aside to talk and understand. And express yourself authentically. So those are the five secrets of mindfulness strategies. You got that, Nancy? Okay.
I like this. You must love in such a way that the person you love feels free.
That, I guess we can do a whole show on that one.
Preach.
Yeah.
I heard a little grumbling from Edward when you said, "Don't be too attached and possessive." I said, "Ooh, he has a contribution."
It's just the problem of all of life, right?
Right.
Attachment and possession and control and trying to manage things so that they work out a certain way. And what freedom comes, I even sighed when I heard that. It's such a reminder. You got to let that drop. And then the trick is to be mindful for those moments when you are starting to be attached. Because if you don't notice it, you know, then it can run its course. Mm-hmm. Being able to interrupt myself when I'm starting to feel attached and possessive, that's the trick. And I think that's part of mindfulness, paying attention to what's going on in the inside.
Something that comes to mind when I think of what Edward just said and the concept of mindfulness is sometimes something could be happening in our environment, or we could be participating in something, and we actually, our breath changes. We start to hold our breath and get tense, and just it becomes overwhelming. You really... Your breath is literally affected. And it sometimes, and when it happens to me, I have to remind myself, like, you're tense. You're holding your breath right now. Your breath has changed. And then it gives me the opportunity to release and then kind of be mindful of what's going on with me and check in. What you got, Edward?
And I think that earlier on we talked about that attraction you mentioned. Originally we had attraction to each other, and I think I have to trust that, and that's what can allow me to drop my attachment. Because there's no guarantee You know, I can't control how things are going to work out. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think sometimes I want to get all possessive and attached, because I want to force things to work out the way I want them. So there's this element of trusting the unknown, and I think that's scary.
Absolutely.
Quite.
You said a mouthful.
Yes, for sure.
All right, Edward, we're going to get deep into the interview on your side. So first thing I want to know is, I want you to tell us about your grandmother.
Oh, my grandmother. You know, when I write about my grandmother, people tell me, I think we had the same grandmother. I think it may be that grandmother is a universal concept, this presence in my life who always had time to do what we're talking about right now, and that is she listened to me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it at the time, but she was training me. Mm-hmm. She was training me to have good relationships, because she trained me about how important it is to put down what you're doing and be there for the people that you love. Her name was Florence, and you know, she got married at a very, very early age to a very bombastic man, and I think in some way it trained her to be patient and kind with the world, and then the grandchildren, we were the beneficiaries of her kindness. And she, her life reminded me of the importance of being mindful around children, because they're listening all the time. Mm-hmm. They're being shaped by how we are in the world. And we may be setting them up to have better relationships if we take the time to listen and be present for them.
You mention in your book that your grandmother, she had a special relationship with tea.
It was a maddeningly special relationship. We would come to her with our broken hearts and our broken stories, and she would nod and say to us, when in the middle of our outpouring, she said, you know, let me make you a cup of tea, because I think in her mind, tea and listening was the solution for all of life's problems.
And I don't really hear you arguing that.
I have got to admit, you know, I think I would much rather sit down with a warm beverage with somebody and listen to them than almost anything in the world. Wow. I think when I listen to people and I drop everything we've been talking about, you know, the energy of my wanting, the attitude of my controlling, and I just listen with that tea even, life becomes beautiful. You know, I almost don't have any, I have nothing to say. I can just listen, and then from people's hearts come the beauty of what they are. Mm.
I got to tell you, that felt really good.
Mm.
I read this,
mm-hmm.
but to hear him say that, it makes me think, wow, I would do good to sit with my wife and drink some tea in the evening. And mm-hmm. funny enough, she asked me just a week ago, did I want any tea? And, you know, I don't drink tea.
Right.
I don't drink coffee or tea or any of that.
Okay.
But she asked me a week ago, did I want any tea? And I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And she kind of thought I was she was making tea for herself.
Right.
I said, sure. And she was like, you don't really want any tea. And she didn't make me any. And it was cool. It was cool because I didn't really want tea, but there was something.
You were willing to have it.
Yeah, I was willing to have some tea.
Yeah.
But to hear what Edward is saying, it feels good.
Makes something else available.
Like I really can see that as being a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And we
never wanted her tea. We never wanted my grandmother's tea.
I broke up over
a
cup of
tea. Ceremony, you know, it's like eating together, and I think that's another way to connect.
True.
Especially in this fast-moving world. I think if families can eat together, that's the same thing. To share this time together, where in an unhurried way we are listening to it, and it doesn't have to be deep, compelling conversations about the problems of the world or relationship. It can be about the most ordinary thing. Did you see anything when you were walking to school or to work? That's a pleasure, to let people talk about the ordinary experiences of their life. And in that also is bonding and connection.
Mm.
Imagine
bonding and connection and talking about those things.
Mm.
Imagine your partner saying, I want to talk, or there's something I want to talk about. And you saying, hold on, let me make us a cup of tea. And
right.
And you sitting down and talking about it over tea. It's, I don't know, the connotation is powerful to me. I never even thought
it. I broke up. I had a breakup conversation over tea.
Mm-hmm.
And it went incredibly well.
Nice.
Really. It was, we could have been talking about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just talking about dissolving our relationship, and there was absolutely no animosity, no like the attitudes didn't rise up.
Mm-hmm.
When it was over, it was the most loving breakup I think I've ever.
Public place, private.
Private.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Where it could have gotten totally out of control, and yeah. We could have, you know.
Yeah.
Huge.
Escalated. Yeah.
Right. It didn't.
I got a quote, a paragraph that Edward wrote about his grandmother and T and, you know, her disposition just to help us see her.
Okay.
He says, other than a supply of tea, novels, her rocking chair, and her grandchildren, she didn't need anything. She expressed no longing to accomplish great things or see exotic places. She was quiet and took up little space in the world. She was enthusiastically grateful for the smallest of kindnesses extended her way. If you gave her something she didn't want or like, you would never know. Because the fact that you gave her something in itself would be delightful to her.
That's beautiful.
That's beautiful. Mm.
You made me feel good hearing that myself. You're making me remember that these attributes, you know, how she instilled them in me. And now even I can see that the way she received from people has made an impression upon me and it makes me acutely aware when I am not being gracious and kind because I have that role model in my mind, you know. So, yes, that's exactly right. She would receive graciously, and she was passionately available for people. You know, earlier on you said, can you imagine sitting with your partner and say, you know, let me make you a cup of tea? And I thought in that moment, my grandmother did the same thing, but with the children. We can do that with our friends and our partner. And the making of the tea can give us something to do while the person begins to reveal. So there, it introduces this element of normal relationship, easygoing. It sets the scene for a beautiful interaction.
Mm. I like that.
And this sets the scene in many ways for his entire book. I mean, mind you, what I just read was from his book, Ordinary Goodness.
Okay.
And so he introduces Grandma in the very beginning, in the introduction, I believe it is. And,
that's right.
And the whole book is kind of built on the introduction of Grandma. So think about what we can do just as in life.
In the spirit of that. Yeah.
Something else that you noted in the book, we were talking a few minutes ago about making time for one another. And you say, traveling at top speed in a vehicle makes the journey dangerous and raises the possibility of accidents. At high speed, the landscape becomes a blur and we cannot see details clearly. And that makes us prone to hurting others.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how I'm thinking about how I pick my kids up from school and I'm in the middle of a project and working and you know,
come on, get in the car.
Yeah, yes, seriously.
Wow.
Yeah. And what the opportunity is. I mean, I do this every day. I mean, I can it's not like these are new nuances.
Right.
Every single day I'm doing the same thing.
Okay.
I can plan to let go.
Okay.
Instead of
and find out what ordinary thing happened in their day.
Seriously.
That's
there
cool.
There you go. That's right.
That's cool.
Who do you think you are, Edward, bringing this stuff?
You just set him on his ear. The kids are going to love you, though.
I'm going to call him Uncle Edward.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
This is Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create better, parents, and partners. You can find this and our archive show, there are well over 100, at franklove.com or on Blog Talk, iTunes, and Stitcher. Now, Edward, why should you talk to strangers? Or what is the opportunity with talking to strangers?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. It's, you know, and it's an adult skill, right? This is for adults to get into. The idea of talking to strangers is to take the walls down that separate and divide us. I think I noticed there's this beautiful lake up here where I live in Northern California, and I go walking around it, and I make it a habit to catch the eye of the people walking in the opposite direction, smile and say hello. Now, do you know that some people are freaked out by that?
Yep.
Because they're so used to living isolated. They say, what is he? What is he on? You know?
Right.
But some people, they break out into such a relief, a smile. And I think that that's what that is about. To discover the world is a friendlier place than society sometimes will have us think.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
I like that.
You know, one of the things that I try to do is... One of the places that this shows up that he's mentioning is when people approach my car for money.
Oh.
You know, when I'm sitting at a light or something like that.
Okay.
If I don't have money, and I really don't carry cash, you know, if I don't have money, the most important thing for me to do is look this person in the face and acknowledge them.
Yeah.
I really believe that fundamentally, that
acknowledge their humanity.
The gift of acknowledgement is huge.
Mm.
And while, you know, we don't have a conversation or anything like that, just to say good morning, how are you?
Okay.
Do
you say I don't have any cash?
If I don't, I might.
Okay.
I mean, if the window's down, very, very possible. If the window's up, you know, depending on the timing, getting the window down, that sort of thing, and then walking past. But acknowledgement is what I find to be critical in that particular exchange.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind. It's a kind thing to do, and it makes the world of difference.
And it's an ordinary goodness.
Right.
There you go.
It's not something that's it's not monumental, and I mean, you're not going to get on the news for doing it.
But you know, as I'm thinking about what you're saying, there might be something actually a little more generous about what you do. Because sometimes you may just roll your window down and hand the person a dollar in a sort of dismissive way.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel yourself that you've done something generous, and yet you've not necessarily been generous at all.
Mm. Oh, that's really good.
Mm. Thank you for that, because I'm one of these people.
That's
it's
good.
Like, oh my gosh, do I have a dollar? And then I feel guilty if I don't have a dollar. And then I feel guilty if I do look at the person and acknowledge them, because I feel like, but I don't have anything for them, and I feel bad. And it's just, but I never think that they might actually want more from me than a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That may just
be the
entree
into
which they create connection with another human being.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
To love is to be vulnerable. I said something very similar to this at a recent talk that I did. Here's a shameless plug. I was
all Norfolk, plugs should be shameless.
I did a talk, a guest lecture.
Okay.
It was in Norfolk, Virginia. Mind you, I'm in D.C. It's about 3.5-4 hours away.
Okay.
Tidewater Community College.
Okay.
Last week. And one of the questions was, how do you help your partner be or feel safe in your relationship? And my answer was pretty much, to love is to be, it was consistent with this quote, to love is to being vulnerable.
Okay.
I said something to the effect of, if you're interested in being safe, relationships aren't the place for you.
That was a great line. Wow.
So what do you have on that, Edward?
Oh, yes. There's that great quote from C.S. Lewis. I see if I can remember. He said, to love is to be vulnerable. And if you want to protect your heart, then you must give it to nobody. You mustn't even give it to an animal. If you said you got to wrap it in a casket of selfishness where it will become hard and impenetrable. And I think that's what you're talking about. Relationship is about the vulnerability of being seen, of not being able to control, of being out there. It has its benefits too, though, because life is love. And without relationships, how will we experience that?
What does it mean to be emphatically present to another person?
I think it means, well, in this day and age, you know, you see a lot of people communicating from behind cell phones, from behind screens, or multitasking. And I think that's exactly the opposite of what you're talking about. It means putting everything down for a moment and listening completely. I remember seeing a cartoon. The dad's reading the paper, and the little girl's trying to talk to him. And she says, "Dad, you have to listen to me with your eyes and your ears and your face, all of you." So, nice. You know, that's what it's about. Put everything down and be there. And then drop all of my busyness in my mind or where out, the other place I want to be, and really take the person in.
Somebody's listening to this saying, "I don't have that kind of time."
We all have it.
Yeah.
We all have that kind of time.
We do. We do. But I can just hear it. And, you know, I work with a young woman who I get teased on the regular about essentially being present with her. And if I'm not there, I had another woman send me an email saying, "You owe me $1 million." I was like, "Why?" And she says, "Because you weren't here, so I had to listen to it." And there are times when I feel like I should turn around and I should try to do something else while I'm talking to her. And often I just can't. It's just easier. It feels like the conversation goes so much more smoothly. It's more satisfying actually for both of us if I just stop and listen to her. And sometimes I feel like, oh my gosh, I got to get this done. I got to get that done. And yet on the flip side, invariably, she will end up saving me time somewhere else in the day because she's able to answer a question or take care of something that totally has me flustered in the moment. I end up sort of getting the time back.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And very few things in life are more urgent than relationships.
Right.
We can end the show
right there.
Like that.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine if you, and I don't know the complete scenario of you and this young lady.
Sure.
But imagine if you created a daily, like, if let's say her name's Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Helen, we're going to. I'm going to pause, and I'm going to have a Helen 10 minutes. I'm dying to hear what's going on with you today.
That's pretty much how I go in. Like, this is it. You may as well surrender.
Yeah.
That's how I
surrender,
feel.
Surrender,
that's right. You may as well surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you know,
we both have a better day.
Person, you know, I want to be here for you, and I want you to start from the beginning. Tell me everything. Don't leave anything out and take as much time as you like. They look at you because they think, how can you possibly have that amount of time? And the truth is, it doesn't take them that long. Sometimes people feel pressed for time because they think, I've got to squeeze my communication into a few short words because this person is busy. But the fact of it is, when they feel the relief that you're there and you tell them you can take as much time as you like, very few people have really been listened to like that.
Right.
And they just want to know that they can. They very rarely take up 2 days, you know? It's more like a few minutes.
True.
Okay, I got a story to tell. All right. I'm going to tell you about a little dynamic between my wife and I.
Okay.
My wife is the passive-aggressive queen.
Oh.
And that's not
husband.
Yes,
no.
She is. And mind you, I love her, you know?
Of course.
It's whatever. It might be the way to deal with the king of aggressiveness. maybe that's me.
Passive aggressive.
Yes.
Okay.
So sometimes we're talking about something that I may care about. So we may be very present to each other for that moment. But then she starts to do something. Like while we're talking, she may pick up her phone or walk to the next room while we're talking. Not still in the conversation at some level, but goes to the next room or may start doing something. And I feel the disconnection immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, babe, can you come back?
Do you think she's saying she's taking in as much as she can take in that moment?
That could be what she's saying. That could, in fact, there's nothing else to say. Yes, that's right. Absolutely what she's saying.
Okay.
And the compassionate thing for me to do would be to pick that up, not judge it, and know that we can come at this again later on. Just let her go.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Thank you, Nancy.
Anytime. That's why I'm here.
I was thinking about that series, the Big Bang Theory, and the lead character, Sheldon. I remember once he was listening to someone. At some point, he just said, "I'd like to stop listening now." And it was very funny at the moment. But I thought about the wisdom of that, you know, instead of just like being distracted and walking away, if I could say to somebody in a kinder way than that, you know what, I think I'm full. Can we take a time out? Can we take a break? I just need to integrate that. And I never thought that was okay because I was always afraid of offending somebody. But actually, I find people appreciate that. If I say, you know what, I think I'm full. Mm-hmm. I just need a little space to take that in. They're more willing to give me the space than if I start to get fidgety, you know, and look, darting my eyes around to try to get out of the room. Just to tell the truth.
And imagine if you can't, as the person who's kind of checking out, you know, in this situation, maybe my wife, even if she can't articulate that, I can still hear it.
You like, can feel
yes,
it.
I can still feel it and give it to her without her formally asking for it.
Right.
That's compassion.
And then you'll get to see how her cauldron, how her container has gotten larger, because she may say, "Are you finished? I'm still listening to you."
Yeah.
Or why are you dropping it right now? Come on, tell me some more. You may get that response at some point. And that'll let you know that her container for what you have to say or her capacity to listen has expanded.
Interesting.
Something to think about.
All right. I'm sitting at Nancy's feet today.
Here we go. Get up, Frank. Get up.
Nancy and Uncle Edward.
I'm telling you, what a combo. Oh, my goodness.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking with author and teacher Edward Full-Yoon. His new book is Ordinary Goodness, The Surprisingly Effortless Path to Creating a Life of Meaning and Beauty. Edward, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
Well, I have a website. It's ordinarygoodness.org, and there you will find videos, a whole library of videos that are all free, a whole library of audio is all free, as well as all kinds of nice resources. A good place to go and visit, and links to the book. And what I'm about right now in the world, and you're making me think about it, is I'm teaching a class here in Northern California about the prayer of Saint Francis, and it's all about being this open-hearted presence in the world. And just throughout this whole conversation, I've been thinking, I wish I had this conversation before I started the class, because this is really what it's about, being present and open and dropping attitudes and embracing the beauty and love of life.
Mm. Wow. All right. So you're giving us some credit?
More than credit. I am inspired from this conversation.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, very much. We appreciate that.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, there are four presentations that you give us in the book. I'm going to ask you about all four. We've already talked about them in some form or fashion. But I'm also going to ask you, how do you practice them? Give me some practical tips. So ordinary goodness, how do you practice it?
Definitely. Okay, so ordinary goodness is the start, and the practice is to notice it. And then once you notice it, to share it. Because the problem, if I can say, in this world is that ordinary goodness has fallen into the background because we're so busy being bombarded with bad news and urgent information and fast-moving advertisements that goodness can fall into the background. So slowing down, anything that slows you down, a walk in nature, sitting down in your garden, making that cup of tea, these are the sort of things that will slow us down to notice the goodness that is simultaneously present in the world, even though we are having turbulent times.
Ordinary kindness. What is it, and how do you practice it?
It's the outcome of noticing goodness. This will develop in us a kindness because we start to notice people and appreciate goodness. And then the practices of kindness, what I love about kindness is you get so much back for such a small investment. It can be as simple as making a commitment to give a compliment or a word of appreciation to the people in our lives. That's another thing that falls into the background. I forget to say how much I appreciate a person.
True. Now, what about ordinary compassion?
When I'm kind to people, what this does is it develops connections, connectivity. And there's nothing you can do about that because compassion is going to rise up out of it whether you like it or not. So when I'm compassionate, I have this connection to people. My heart is open, and there's this mutual nurturing that goes on. And this allows me to have a more full-hearted experience of life.
And is faith ordinary? Is there
faith? Is that trust. And it comes out of compassion, right? Okay. When we're connected to people and we feel their lives, then what rises up in us is this trust in that which cannot be easily explained. And that takes us back to the beginning of goodness again. And so faith is like a muscle. You and I get to exercise it, otherwise it gets flabby. So if I got to practice, you know, I often say to people, look, if you don't have a taste for ambiguity and the unknown and contradiction, then this whole relationship and this whole goodness thing is not going to be easy for you, because there's a very strong part of it that just defies logical explanation, and that certainly is true of relationships.
You wrote about one of the practices that you've written about is a personal manifesto, sitting down and creating a person sitting down and creating their own personal manifesto. What's the point there?
I think when we take time to write something down, what we've done is we've taken our thoughts, which are moving so fast and they're so organic, and we've filtered them down onto a page where we can see them, almost like we've captured them, like a snapshot for a moment. Mm-hmm. And when they're stuck on that page, we can examine them, and they become an instrument. They become a tool for us to be reminded of what we say our life is about. Because here's the thing. If I tell you, you know what, I stand for kindness, but I don't leave any trail of evidence in my life that that's true. I say to you, I stand for kindness, but the way I treat the person who's asking for a dollar doesn't show any kindness. Then there's a disconnect between what I say I am and what's true in my life. And so a manifesto can help me be true to what I say I'm all about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I don't know what I'm about, and one of the things I suggest to people is, well, imagine, a bit macabre, but imagine that you passed on and you're at your own memorial and you're watching it, and the person memorializing you says, you know, that Edward, to know him was to know that he stood for, what are they going to say? And that's going to help you write your manifesto. And, you know, if you don't like what comes up in your mind, then you know, okay, I've got some work to do. Yeah. I have to bring my action, my activity, my speaking, my listening, my relationship. I have to bring that into harmony with what I think I'm about.
There's this week, I was having a conversation with a young woman. And she is, in her own way, she's kind of a clairvoyant.
Okay.
She hears things and gets messages about people and that sort of thing. And she was kind of venting how frustrating that can be. Mm-hmm. She hasn't figured out how to receive it and let it go. She just receives it. And one of the things that I suggested that she do, and this doesn't exactly coincide with what Edward just said about the manifesto, but it does in terms of what he was saying earlier about things jumping around in our heads, thoughts moving fast.
Yes.
So I find that it's important for me to make little notes. Like I have these note cards in my car. I have index cards where something, if I think about something, I just make a three-word note or something like that on the index card, and it gets out of my head. Like, I can let it go, because if I don't do that, it's going to, I'll be thinking about it incessantly, mm-hmm. and it'll almost be like, when are you going to do something with this?
Right.
And if I don't, go on, Edward.
Yeah, that's why journaling is so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives those ideas a place to land. And I think you're right. When I don't write it down, then the idea, it's almost like it doesn't want to get lost. So it becomes more urgent. And then it possesses me.
Yes.
So now it's on the paper. Now everybody can be calm and carry on.
Right.
And if I don't write it down, what then comes up, if I forget it, is that I forgot something that was important to me.
and
it's like,
remember.
Yes, right.
Yes.
Now, Edward, I have not had the opportunity yet to introduce you to Jeff, but I think I said something that Jeff is going to have a smart comment to.
It's not a smart comment, actually.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's actually it points to some genius thinking in doing that. And I only know that from a story about Sly Stone, mm-hmm. the legendary band leader, recording artist who's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pad in every room, including bathrooms. He never knew when the inspiration for an idea would come.
Mm-hmm.
And when it did, pad and pen were there.
Mm-hmm.
My question to Edward is, does this phenomenon lessen with age? Getting more forgetful or less creative or less spontaneous as people get older, do they lose that trait?
I think it's a combo of, I think we become more gentle with how we hold life. And I think that our attachments lessen. They can. And as we slow down, it's not that we experience less of life. More of life's richness becomes available to us. And I love the idea of having a pad in every room. And, you know, I'm an advocate for having less time on smart devices, except for something like this, because smart devices you can carry around with you. And I use mine to do exactly what you just mentioned, to jot down a note. And then it's right there. It becomes a great source for reflection and inspiration.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if I actually put everything in a nice bow, but when I was talking to the young woman, I suggested that she get a book, and when she gets a message about someone, you know, write it down. You know, as a way of letting it go, mm-hmm. and you don't have to retain it and be burdened with it. It's like people handing you 50-pound rocks, and you continue to hold that rock instead of putting it down and being open to handle to receive another rock.
Yeah.
But you just, mm-hmm. you know, 50 pounds becomes 100 on 150, and
right.
you pretty much end
you
up
can't carry it after
yeah,
a while.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
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 Oh.
Did she accept them?
She it seemed to be valuable to her.
Okay.
I mean, amazingly, that something I had to say meant something to someone.
I'm not surprised.
All right, the kindness gem.
Hmm.
Technology has made it possible for us to connect in new ways and communicate at lightning speeds with people we've never met. With this sudden faux intimacy, some important communication skills are suffering in what turns out to be a fast and impersonal way of life. From behind a computer screen or gazing into a smart device, it's easy to dehumanize a person who might be reading our communication. When we dehumanize a person, we may see no reason to be thoughtful, kind, respectful, or gentle.
Mm.
Rather than flee entirely from participating in online communication, I've decided to let the world of e-communication become my kindness gym, where I get to work on getting stronger in my use of kindness and iron out the kinks in my communication style.
I love that. That is so, you know why I love it? I love it. What, okay, so I don't know, 30 years ago, let's say, I may have told you this before, I received a card from my cousin, and she cursed in the card. And at that time in our lives, we didn't curse. So mm-hmm. I didn't know how to take it. I was mm-hmm. like, what does this mean? Is she like upset with me? So I erred not on the side of caution, and I sent her this letter back that was just like, what do you mean? Blah, 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 blah. That misunderstanding cost us a good 25 years of relationship.
Are you serious?
I'm not kidding you. Because then she wrote back. She, you know, slammed me and wrote back. And I was just like, oh, my God, I don't really know what to do with this now. Mm-hmm. And so we were cordial when we saw each other, mm-hmm. but we were not close again. Mm-hmm. So that exchange forever changed the way I talk to people in writing. Mm. And I don't care if it's a text message, an email. Sometimes I hate to even bother to send email because it's such a labor to make sure that I'm not using language that would completely fly in person, mm. but is too strong in a letter mm-hmm. where you have the person
That's
captive
right.
audience.
Yeah.
And you tend to think, oh, this person knows me. They know how I talk. Well, my cousin was making the same assessment, mm-hmm. and
That's
I misunderstood
right.
her. And rather than to send a quick note saying, hey, love you too, hope things are going well at school, and what is this? I didn't get that. I should have said, I almost misunderstood you. I could have
right.
like owned it.
Yeah.
And erred on the softer side and then found out that she was quite serious, but mm-hmm. I didn't. Where now that is absolutely my go-to. Mm-hmm. Totally embrace the conversation as if it is benign, even if mm-hmm. it is clearly not benign. Mm-hmm. And I remember receiving a letter from a man who was accusing me of not keeping my, he flat out, you didn't keep your agreement. You said this, 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 and this. And I found the email that I had sent him saying everything that I said, like, listen, this is what I told you I would do. I have done all these things. And thank you so much for your patience. He somehow missed the email. Mm-hmm. So he didn't even know I had done everything I had promised to do. But I found that email, which is the one reason I love emails. Mm-hmm. Awesome archive. And then I was able to reply in that email, and I never said, how dare you talk to me this way? You didn't check your... I didn't accuse him of anything. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm so sorry. Evidently...
We missed each other.
Yeah, we missed each other. And and he then writes back, oh, my goodness. He couldn't have been mm-hmm. more apologetic. Mm-hmm. But after that, I was like, you know what? That happened to me. Because I was definitely one of these people who thought I could say on paper what I would say in person. Mm-hmm. And without
right.
that loss, and fortunately she and I are in relationship now, mm-hmm. but without having suffered that loss, I don't think I would have ever gotten the message as clearly.
Mm. How did you That's reconnect good. With your cousin?
We saw each other, believe it or not, I think it was when my uncle passed. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of those situations where it wasn't a kind of in and out thing. We had to actually be together. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
then, and we were together. It wasn't like it was all that difficult, really. It was kind of like, what were we doing? You know, because we hadn't lost any love for each other. It was just like, I'm over yeah. you too, you know? So, and
forget
then.
You.
Yeah,
forget you.
Forget you. Forget you, Rachel. You know, because we have been, I mean, we were total chums as children. Total.
Wow. It and goes back to childhood.
We were children. We grew up together. So, and we're related on both sides of our family. I mean, there's no getting away from each other, right? And that, I think, all of that, I feel that just kind of swirled around to be like, oh, you're going to get this message and mm-hmm. you're going to get it and I'm not going to have to teach it to you anymore. Like, note from the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And really, looking back on it, I'm not so sure that it wasn't divine in a way.
I'm sure it was.
I say that because my cousin had such a powerful influence on me. And I feel like that there were so many things I got into in my life because I was no longer reporting back to her on what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I just was free to explore. Uh-huh. And so she lives a much more conventional life uh-huh. than I do.
Your balance was off.
What? I was totally plugged in. And I don't even think she realized that.
Uh-huh.
But looking back, I knew that I, on some level, sort of idolized her. She was bigger in stature. She was, her personality was, you know, she was more forceful, and I was already forceful, so somebody more forceful than me was fascinating as a kid, and I just ate it up. Mm-hmm. But once we were unplugged, then it was like, well, I'm free to be, just like that earlier lines, I was free to be me. And I didn't even know I wasn't free. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. And I can't say I'm grateful for the places I found myself in life and say I'm sorry for what, I am sorry that it turned out
accept
that
it
way.
I can only
accept it as it was. Yeah.
Okay. Edward, you got anything? In fact,
oh, yeah, I'm just remembering that email is, you know, it's the same thing that you're talking about. It's so, especially when I shoot out a one-liner, I don't know how that's going to be received. So in my organization, we have a practice that we use email as if it's a written letter.
Yes.
So we begin with a salutation. Dear Nancy, comma, new line, how are you? Mm-hmm. First, we ask the connecting question. You know, it's not just like get to business, you know, like pick up these things from here. No. So we write the email as if it's a humane communication. And some of my colleagues say, who's got time for that? And I tell them again, you know what? Life is about relationship. And if I don't have the time to put some heart into that email, then what's the use of it? I don't want my life to get faster. Mm-hmm. I want my life to get deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationships in it to get deeper.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, what else is there?
Yeah. Can you give me that? Do you remember what you said a half hour ago? That was the
Yes, I do. very few things in life are more urgent than relationships.
There you go. Powerful.
I love it. All right, one more. There was one more piece I wanted to read, but before I do that, Edward, you got a good movie and a good book that you want to offer.
Oh, man, a good book. Because I'm reading it right now, Kent Nerburn, he wrote this book, Living, The Prayer of St. Francis, and he goes through it step by step and talks about joy, about light, about love. And to me, it is compelling. I'm loving it. I'm really being inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
And a good movie, you know, I recently watched the Dune. You remember Frank Herbert's Dune?
Yes.
It wasn't very popular in the world, and I think it's because the science fiction fans thought maybe they squeezed too much into the movie. But what I loved about it was this element of relationship and loyalty, and I drink that up when a movie's got that. Mm-hmm. You know, the father and son relationship was so powerful. Yeah, that's one of my favorites, Dune.
Really? I'm gonna add that to the queue. You said that's a father and son story in it?
Well, there's you know, these tragedies in the story about betrayal and how the son has to take the father's place and struggle against corruption and all. You know, it's just beautiful to watch. Mm-hmm. It's a bizarre movie, and I'm nervous that I recommended it. But I enjoyed it very much.
Please don't be. I'll check back, and I'll have my critique on it, and I'm sure it'll be on the positive side.
Yeah.
You know, I did a talk at the interview at the University of Michigan recently, on fatherhood to the at the School of Social Work, and it was the interviewer, who was a professor there at the university, asked me about some movies that I like that had to do with fatherhood, and I'd never thought about it, but the first movie that came to mind was The Godfather, and If you really think about, and one of the things I believe in terms of how we interact with our children is that keeping them close is more important than being punitive.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really think about The Godfather, particularly the first one, it was a father-son movie. From the
That's
very
right.
beginning of the movie, there was a picture being taken of the family, the entire family at the wedding.
Yes.
And the Don, the, you know, Marlon Brando said, no picture without Michael. He said, where's Michael? And then they, you know, Michael was somewhere. I don't think he'd gotten to the wedding yet. And he said, no picture without Michael. Mm. And it, the whole, you know, everybody dispersed.
Right. Right.
And that was that until Michael got there.
Right.
And that was and Michael was so, he was the rebel of the family. You know, he went into the military.
Yeah.
His father had gotten him into a good school and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he was clearly not on the track his father wanted him to be on, but he clearly meant. He meant a lot to his father.
Yes.
Yes.
Actually,
I'd forgotten about that. Yeah. That's true. That's beautiful.
Actually, the opposite. Marlon Brando, or Don Corleone, said he didn't want Michael to take over the family.
He did say that. Yes.
You're going to be Senator Corleone.
That's right.
President Corleone, not this. But the best father movie, hands down.
Hit it.
Mm-hmm.
Field of Dreams.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I never saw it.
Oh, my. What's wrong with you?
I'll add it to the queue.
Tonight.
That's Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner's best movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a father. That's a life movie.
Okay.
Mm. Get some tissues, too.
Mm. Wow.
Every time.
Okay. And back to The Godfather real quick. Mm. Remember, Michael ended up coming into, he ended up becoming a part of the family, the organized crime family, because his father was going to be killed. He wanted to protect his father. That was how he came into the family. He said, these guys are going to kill Pop. There's nothing basically that's going to stop him from killing Pop. And he determined that he was going to be the person that killed them, because it was just the best option that they had at the time.
His brothers weren't.
Yeah, well, one brother couldn't do it. He was mentally not able, and they weren't going to let Sonny anywhere near them because he was a hothead. So that was that. I mean, that the movie was father son layered, and Field of Dreams. Now I gotta challenge you, Jeff, real quick. You said that's Kevin Costner's best movie, and I was just reading a review this week on movies of 1987, and one of them was No Way Out. Do you remember No Way Out?
It was shot here in D.C.
Yes, it was. So that was a good one, too. I don't know. I haven't seen Field of Dreams, but, you know.
When you see Field of Dreams, you know what I'm talking about. James Earl Jones, it's perfect. Okay. It's a perfect movie.
Cool.
Wow. How did we get here?
But, because you asked him for a movie.
It happens. So, Edward, you have the last word. What you got?
Oh, I want to just say that the ordinary part of ordinary goodness means that our lives are just filled up with the most spectacular, beautiful things. It's just that because we haven't paid attention to them in the ways that we're talking about today, that they fall into the background. And so my invitation to people is to slow down and notice their friends, their family, their children, their neighborhood, nature around them. They don't have to look for the most spectacular sunset. It can be any old sunset. It's just that in the mindful noticing of life and people, something comes alive in us. And I think if there is such a thing as a goal or a reason for our life, I would say it is to bring that goodness back into the forefront of our lives.
Nice.
There we go.
Okay.
This is Frank Relationships, and you've been listening to author and teacher Edward Full-Yoon. His new book is Ordinary Goodness, The Surprisingly Effortless Path to Creating a life of meaning and beauty. Edward, last time, please tell us how we can find you, and if you want, what you're up to.
My website is ordinarygoodness.org, and you can find me there. Also, my book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, anywhere that they sell books. And what I'm up to is I take people around the world. You know, I take people on tours to Bali where I teach them about spirituality, and that's one of my passions, and you can find out more about that on my website, too.
Nice. Along today's journey, we've discussed slowing down and noticing the little ordinary things, compassionate interaction, and daily kindness. Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thank you to Jeff Newman, my engineer, and thank you to my guest, Edward Full-Yoon. You've been great.
Thank you so much.
You bet. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., that's M-R, Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.